Welcome to the Free and Open Source Software Podcast Series featuring presentations from the FOSVT Conference at Lake Maury Inn Resort.
This year's podcasts were recorded and produced by Tech Savvy Kids from St. Albans, Vermont. This episode features David Trask talking about myths and magic of FOSS.
Hope you enjoy it.
The only reason I ask that is because, like you, well, actually, maybe not like you, because I think you guys have a professional development day here in Vermont. Is that true? Or how many of you are missing school? All right. You're just like me. Okay? I have a sub in my lab today. Okay? My name is David Trask, and I am the technology director / teacher at Vassalville Community School, which is a school, K-8 school of about 500 in Central Maine. And people think that we're in a very rural area, which we are, but if you drive 3 or 4 miles this way or 3 or 4 miles that way, you've got the state capital on one side and the city of Waterville on the other, and we're kind of like the big field in the middle. We don't have our own high school. We're actually a sending school, but there are probably 7 high schools within a 20-mile radius. Small high school by national standards. You know, most of them in the 600 to 700 range, or maybe smaller, in terms of the size of the high school. But anyway, I am a classroom teacher, and as a result, I speak from your point of view. I've been teaching for about 23 years now, and I've taught every subject, not every subject, but I've taught every grade level. I've taught regular ed social studies for several years. I've taught high school special ed for over a decade, and so been there, done that, and right now I've got the teacher. What I'm going to be talking to you about today is how I use open source in my own classroom and in my own school. Being not only the classroom teacher, I'm also the technology director, so I'm responsible for all of it. I built the network, I installed the network, I deployed all the computers, I run the servers, I call Time Warner whenever we need our fiber run and so forth. So I take care of it all. And I also happen to be the sponsor of the conference, very much like this one. This one's actually kind of the precursor to a 3-day open source conference, which takes place in Maine. And I'll talk more about that later. So how many of you are actually using open source in your schools now, in any way, shape, or form? Okay, cool. One of the biggest myths that I run into, I better put this in my pocket. One of the biggest myths that I run into, and probably you run into it as well, is that if it's free, it can't be any good. Because we generally tend to equate free stuff as being cheap, not well made, and so forth. However, I want you to think when you're talking to your staff members and to your teachers and to your students and so forth, that some of the best things in life are free. Think about it. I mean, really think about it. The things that you desire the most, love, happiness, water, all of those things are free. Why shouldn't software be any different? Now, a lot of people, if somebody doesn't get paid for it, how are they going to make good software? And I have this argument with my students all the time, which, by the way, are your age. I have this argument with my students all the time. And I try to point out to them, hey, you know what? If I paid you to sit in a room and code software all day long, would you do a good job, even if you didn't like what you were doing? And, you know, many of them say, well, how much are you going to pay me? And then I say to them, okay, if I ask you to do something that you really love to do, and gave you all the time you wanted to be able to do it, would you do a good job? And most of them would, yeah, of course I would. That's the difference. The people who work in open source projects, a perfect example, how many of you in here use OpenOffice? Anybody? Okay. The people who work in OpenOffice, for example, while some of them do get paid, some of them work for companies such as IBM, Sun Microsystems, and Amazon, so forth and so on, Google actually has a very large contingent, Novell. While those companies will quite often appoint particular programmers to work on that particular project, On the other hand, there are thousands of programmers all over the world who are simply doing it because they want to. And when you do something because you want to, you tend to do a pretty darn good job. And as a result, open source software reaps the benefits of that expertise from people who are doing it because of passion and not because they're getting paid for it. And that's why I found, especially, and that's why I try to impress upon my students, that quite often open source software can be better than its proprietary counterpart because it's not driven by money. But that's one of the myths that I really wanted to dispel, is that just because it's free doesn't mean it can't be good. And I'm going to show you some examples as we go along. Let me get this out here. By the way, this is the coolest thing. If any of you don't have one of these and you do presentations at your schools or so forth, or you teach with so forth, this is actually a wireless mouse. But it opened up and a little USB dongle popped out. And you can either use it as your regular wireless mouse or you can use it to run your presentation, which is great. I actually use this with my own kids. In fact, right now, because I just rotated my students, my new unified arts rotation in grade 6 through 8, I actually use OpenOffice and Google Docs, as a matter of fact, to teach my kids how to make a presentation. I always tell my kids that a monkey can make a slideshow. Maybe a brilliant monkey, I don't know, but a monkey can make a slideshow. And we actually start doing things such as, I'll use PowerPoint as your generic term, but we start using OpenOffice and Google Docs presentation and so forth in the third grade. And by the time they get into the sixth grade and so forth, making the slideshow is not the problem, okay? Anybody can make a slideshow, that's easy. Making the presentation is the thing that I try to teach them at that point. So right now, in fact, they're working on it this afternoon, because I actually gave the assignment yesterday. They're working on a presentation activity right now where they had to pick kind of an eclectic object or kind of an offbeat thing, such as had one student that did Moxie. Now, many of you may, if you're not from Maine or you've never been to Maine, you may not be familiar with Moxie, but Moxie is a very unique soda, okay? You either love it or you hate it. There's no in between. It's kind of a cross between Dr. Pepper and root beer and a few other things in between. If any of you have ever had, I happen to love Moxie, but there are people who hate it. But it, Moxie was one of those things that if you ever took an advertising class in college, very similar to the whole Brill Cream. Was it Brill Cream? What was the one that they had a sign every so many miles? Burmese. Okay. They had an advertising campaign very similar to that, and they still do. Everything's orange and so forth and so on. They have a big Moxie festival in Maine. So he did one on Moxie. I had some kids that did Rubik's Cube, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. I got one girl just yesterday decided to do the Chinese finger cuff. And what they have to do is they have to look up all of the information that they can find on those things. They go to Wikipedia and they learn the history of it and so forth and so on. And then they have to present it. Now, and the big thing that I tell them, if you read off the screen, I'm going to make you sit down and do it again. Okay? We used to have one of the big no-nos of making a presentation in general, and that's why I'm not reading off the screen, but is that you insult your audience when you read off the screen. If you put a whole paragraph worth of stuff up there and then you read it to everybody, that's kind of insulting to your audience because you're assuming they can't read. What I try to do is impress upon them to put ideas and so forth up on the screen and then talk about it. But I also say, I may just turn off the projector in the middle of your presentation. Then what are you going to do? Keep going? Yeah. And so I used a fictitious example. You know, if I was a presenter going out to California to do a presentation on my product to be sold in a grocery store in the San Francisco area, and I fly over there, and I'm in the corporate offices, and all of a sudden I realize my laptop doesn't work, do I just fold up and go home? No. Okay? The show must go on. And so the kids learn that the presentation is really them, not necessarily what's going on behind them. This is merely a support mechanism for people to look at and for jumping off with ideas and so forth as you go. Now, I know you think I just went off on a little tangent, but one of the things that we miss in education is that it's the concept that counts the most. It's not the application. It's the concept. If we look back to where you were perhaps 10 years ago, or take this year's eighth graders or this year's freshmen in high school, and look back in your school when they were in kindergarten, what did you have? I can tell you what I had in my school. I had those little Apple LC2s. Remember those things? They're about this thick. And had a whopping 2.5 megabytes of RAM. And the LC580s, which is kind of the all-in-one Mac thing. And we had the ThinNet coax network with a little BNC connector on the back. And if one of them went down, it brought the whole network down. That type of thing. We were using programs such as ClarisWorks, Aldus PageMaker, those types of things. And as I look back on those applications, almost every single one of those companies no longer exists. If I had wasted my time teaching those particular applications, that's exactly what I would have done. I would have been wasting my time teaching those applications. If you look back in terms of Microsoft Windows 95, okay, how many people remember back that far? How many of you were born back that far? I'm just kidding. So if you look at Office 95 or even Office 97 and compare it to Office 2007, they don't look anything alike. In fact, Office 2003 and Office 2007 don't look anything alike. You know, they moved to the whole ribbon concept and so forth. Takes a little getting used to, but hey, if we spend all of our time teaching how to use a particular application rather than teaching kids that, you know what? Control F, save, no matter what program you're in, or if you're on a Mac, it's Clover F. Adding clip art is generally insert picture clip art in almost every program, and those types of things. Those particular concepts which can be transferred from one program to another. A particular example that I use, my second grade students walk into the lab, okay, and I have them open up OpenOffice. We use Linux, by the way. We have Linux computers. And I have them open up OpenOffice. And I say, okay, kids, type the word cat. Of course, they all think it's a big waste for them. I'm done! And okay, now I show them how to highlight it. In other words, drag your mouse across it and make it all black so that you can change it. They change the font. I show them how to change the font. The first thing I do is show them how to change the size. Now, this is where OpenOffice is so much better than Microsoft Word. In the eyes of a second grader, it rocks. Why? Because the default largest font size in a drop-down list is 96 instead of 72. That's humongous! And so that's what happens. They make it really big, and all of a sudden you hear the whole class go, whoa! Because their name is so big. Then they're changing the colors. And then I showed them how to make it bold, and I showed them how to change the font, perhaps. And I only showed them this once. I show it to them in OpenOffice. We practice on a couple of different words. Then I say, okay, everybody, close out of OpenOffice. This time I want you to click on where it says connect to Windows Terminal Server. So we're still on a Linux machine. They don't even have to leave. They just click on a menu item to connect to Windows Terminal Server, and it logged them into Windows. And I say, okay, fire up Microsoft Word. And now do the same thing. And I'm not going to tell you how to do it. They look at it for just a second. Now remember, these are second graders. They look at it for just a second. And oh, I figured it out. And so they type the same word. They do the same thing. And it's a big race for them to see who finishes first. I've taught them the concept once on one program. By the end of the period, we've used OpenOffice, Microsoft Word, Abby Word, K Word, and Google Docs. And I've taught it to them once. That's the important part. A lot of people say nobody uses open source, okay? Now, if I had asked this question a few years ago, I would be even more correct. But a lot of people say nobody uses open source, except me. This is just a small example of the organizations around the world that use open source software in various forms in their organization. All of the public schools in Macedonia. Macedonia has this huge Linux PC rollout to every single public school in the entire country. So not only are they using open source applications, they're using open source operating systems as well. Bangkok Airways, the state of Argentina, all the public schools in Spain. I've actually been to those. I was over very fortunate to be invited over to Spain a couple of years ago to the education Education Summit. And while I was over there, I got a chance to tour a couple of schools in the city of Seville. And one of the things that actually the computer systems in the schools are basically run by the government, in the sense that the entire province of Andalusia, which is the state in the southern part of Spain, which basically has the city of Seville as its county seat, for lack of a better word. And the way the whole thing is set up is that the state has negotiated a deal with computer vendors to provide the hardware for all of the schools. The state actually has an entire department which develops the image that is deployed to all of the schools. It's really quite an amazing process that they have, and a very simple one from the school end of things. They will upload the image to a server at your school whenever they make a change. They have a very Moodle-like interface that alerts the technology director at that school, you know, you have a new image waiting, put it up whenever you're ready. And they use any one of many imaging products, but I'm going to say probably one called ETALC, ITALC, to basically deploy the image to all of the machines in the school, and they can usually do it before the kids arrive. And that's pretty cool. And it's all Linux. Okay, it's actually called Guada Linux, which is based on Ubuntu. Many large companies, Novell, Sun Microsystems, Google, if you walk around the Google campus, you will find that probably 75% of their machines on the Google campus are powered by Linux and using open source. In fact, they call it, they have their own version of Ubuntu that they call Gubuntu. The Dallas Independent School District. The Dallas Independent School District is bigger than probably the entire state of Vermont and all the kids that are in it. I'm from Maine, so I can say the same thing. The state of Maine is a perfect example. We're known as the laptop state. We've got laptops in grades 7 through 8 for every single kid in the state. And on those laptops is a wealth of open source software. Granted, they're Macs and they run OS X, but they use NeoOffice, which is open office for the Mac. They use things such as CyberDuck, Audacity, Celestia, Delirium, and a whole bunch of others I can't think of at the moment. Amazon. How many of you have ever bought anything on Amazon before? Okay, you're connecting to an open source server every single time that you do that. Amazon has a huge Linux network, and so forth and so on. How many of you use Windows in your schools? I'm not talking about the things that keep the bugs out. I'm talking about, by the way, that's a double-edged sword right there. So a lot of you use Windows. That doesn't mean that you can't use open source. I want you to think about something for a second. If you take a bare computer, okay, and some of you may have actually done it, you take a bare computer and you install Windows, now what can you do? Windows is installed, what can you do? That's all you get to do.
Cal and TMac and...
Oops, what did I do? Oh, no. Wow, that's cool. No kidding. Oh, man! I just discovered something new. I can't wait to talk about it on the kids. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, calculator that comes with Windows. Well, key mapper, so you can use different...
What about that amazing word processing program?
Notepad and WordPad.
Yeah, Notepad and WordPad.
Right, two options.
And you can probably surf the internet.
Yeah,
okay? You won't get far until you install that antivirus program, because basically that's the first thing you do. You use the big blue E to connect to the internet, to download the antivirus program so that you can do something else. But if you think about it, you install the operating system, that's really all you can do. You've got a few little tools that you can do things with, but you can't really do much else. So then you've actually got to go out and buy stuff. Okay? You've actually either got to go out and buy Microsoft Office, okay? And I'm not sure what Microsoft Office costs now, but at one point for the full professional version, I can remember the number of $479 being tossed around. I'm sure that you can buy the student edition for right around $100. Is that right? Okay. So, and then, of course, if you're buying it in bulk, you know, it may come down to like $48 a machine, but that's still quite a bit of money. You know, I used to think back to my own lab when I used to have, 22 machines in my lab, which were primarily Windows machines, and the fact that I had Microsoft Office installed on all of them. be pretty expensive, even at $50 a pop. Now, that's another computer or two that I could have bought. You don't have to use proprietary software just because you're using a proprietary operating system. If you want to use open source software, please do. Not only that, one of the great things about using open source is it gives you the opportunity to standardize. How many of you are using Windows, Mac OS X, and something else in your school? Anybody have Macs in their school? Okay. So if you're using multiple platforms, sometimes it's difficult for kids to get used to the fact, or people in general to get used to the fact that on the Windows machines I'm supposed to click the big blue E, and on the Mac I'm supposed to click the little blue compass, and so forth, when you can actually standardize. Most open source software will work on all three platforms. So you can put Firefox on all of them. You can put OpenOffice on all of them. And it looks the same all the way across. Have any of you ever used Office 2008 for the Mac? And Office 2007 for Windows? They look absolutely nothing alike. And right now I'm dealing with this argument in Maine because we're actually looking at expanding the laptop program grade 7 through 12. And that's another whole political football that's going to get punted this year. We'll see what happens. It's really messy. I'm glad to be here because I've been embroiled in that for the last few days. But I stood up in a meeting and I said, those of you who are thinking about spending your hard-earned budget dollars to buy and put Microsoft Office 2008 on all of your laptops, now we're talking about high school that may be buying, not buying, well, yes, they are buying, 700 laptops. And they come with OpenOffice, but now you want to deploy, Microsoft Office on those machines. That's a lot of money, and a lot of people are looking at doing that because they want that continuity for the teachers. They want that continuity for them from Microsoft Office on the PC to Microsoft Office on the Mac. And I stood up and I said, "Are you nuts? OpenOffice looks more like Microsoft Office than Microsoft Office does." It's really that much different. It's not even close. So, whether you're using OS X or Windows, the open source model is there for you. You don't have to use Linux in your school to take advantage of open source. And you can save a ton of money doing so. Just a few examples of some of the open source programs that you can run on a Windows machine, on a Mac. All of these programs that are up here, by the way, OpenOffice. By the way, if you haven't seen OpenOffice 3, OpenOffice 3 is a huge improvement over the earlier versions of OpenOffice. This is actually the opening screen for OpenOffice 3. This one right down here, anybody know what that is?
TuxPaint.
I knew you guys would know. TuxPaint, okay? And that's an amazing program. I have kids using it every day, especially kindergarten kids. In fact, you can guess what kind of pictures we're making this week. Easter pictures. Except for those kids who aren't allowed to make Easter pictures, and they're making pictures of spring. But, and over here, this is GIMP. GIMP, again, is available on all three platforms. Especially nowadays, for those of you who run the Mac, especially nowadays, now that the Mac has moved to the Intel processor, a lot of the things that weren't previously available for the Mac are now. And, of course, the old standby up there, Firefox, which is my favorite browser. But, and there are a host of other programs. How many of you are familiar with Celestia? Anybody here ever used Celestia? If you haven't, I highly encourage you to download it and check it out. It's available on all three platforms, C-E-L-E-S-T-I-A. It is the most amazing virtual planetarium you will ever see. Here's a perfect example of something that's open source that is far better than any of the proprietary counterparts. There is not a proprietary piece of software out there that comes even close. If they use the actual images from NASA, the Jet Propulsion Labs, and so forth, it is an amazing piece of software. Anybody here ever used a piece of software called Stellarium? S-T-E-L-L-A-R-I-U-M. Okay, same thing. Very similar to Celestia. It's also a virtual planetarium. I don't want to say it's a little more interactive, but it's interactive in different ways. One program that I hope to show you before we leave here is K-Stars, which is a much lower, in terms of resources, much less intensive piece of software. All of these pieces of software are free. They're absolutely free. and they're better than anything that you're ever going to be able to buy. Now, for those of you who are not using ever considered the possibility of using Linux in the schools, and there are actually some schools here in Vermont that do. I believe Brantford has a pretty big Linux deployment. There's the myth that Linux is for geeks, okay? And that you have to have a computer science degree in order to install it. If you've never installed Linux, I invite you to do so. Grab an old machine from somewhere, go into the library when nobody's looking, take in a CD, and give it a shot. Because the one thing that you're going to find for many people, that installing Linux is actually easier than installing Windows now. Why? Because Linux asks all of the questions up front, instead of Windows, where you have to put in the disk and babysit it and go back and get a cup of coffee and then go back and answer this question and go away and then come back and answer this question and then go away and come back and click this checkbox and go away and then eventually it's done. And you ever notice how Windows says when it's installing, your installation will be done in 37 minutes? I don't think so.
That's a static picture.
It's not, it never seems to change. It's 37 minutes for the last 20 minutes. Linux has actually improved so much in the last 3 to 4 years that I really do invite you to take a look at it.
Sure. Where
would you go to find it? One of the best places to find an easy-to-use Linux distribution is Ubuntu.com, U-B-U-N-T-U.com. That's the most popular distribution right now, and it happens to be, in my opinion, one of the easiest to use. Another one is, help me out here if you know, I think it's Fedora Project. Is it FedoraProject.com or .org, I think. Fedora, we like the hack, F-E-D-O-R-A, project.org. Yeah?
I think your city has a
Ubuntu
server. The DVDs
that came in
the bag.
Yeah.
That you can use.
Sure. And not only that, many Linux distributions come with what they call a live CD. So you can actually put that CD into a computer and actually experience the whole Linux concept without installing it on your machine at all. Okay? The moment you take the CD out, you're done. That is an awesome thing to do with kids. I got to tell you the quick story. How much time do I have left? Oh, I'm doing fine. Awesome story to tell you. Bassaville, which is my town, also happens to be the home of the Criminal Justice Academy for the state of Maine. And so therefore, I have some pretty high-ranking cops in Bassaville. And one of them happened to be one of my daughter's best friends and happened to be one of my students. They have an old Windows 98 machine in their home, and she needed to work on a presentation. And so she asked me, you know, Mr. Tuck, I don't know if I can do this at home. I don't really have PowerPoint or anything to work on at my house. Okay. Well, I didn't happen to have an open office CD right on me. So I said, well, here, why don't you take this? I had an Ubuntu CD. So I gave her the Ubuntu CD, and I said, listen, all you need to do is just put this in your computer, go ahead and work with OpenOffice, save it on your thumb drive when you're done, which she had, because at that point in time we were selling them to the kids. So she had her USB thumb drive, and so she would do her presentation, save it to the thumb drive, take the CD out, take the thumb drive out, and walk away. I said, just for kicks, leave the Ubuntu CD in your computer until your dad gets home. And just tell him when he walks in the door, hey, Dad, look, I installed Linux on our computer. What do you think? And see what he says. Now, her dad is the second in command for the Maine State Police. I heard about it a few weeks. First of all, the next day she came in, she was roaring. It was great, I guess. His reaction was fantastic. But about 2 weeks later, I happened to see him at a soccer game, and he kind of sidles up beside me and says, you drive to work, right? But we started having a conversation, and the cool thing was is that he said, you know, I sat down and I played with it for a little bit. There's a lot of software that comes on that CD, isn't there? Well, people don't understand. We were talking about just a second ago, what happens when you install Windows on a computer? Not much. You get Windows, and that's it. Okay? But when you put Linux on a computer, almost every single Linux distribution comes with a pretty complete set of software already on it. Most Linux distributions come with OpenOffice. Most of them come with GIMP. And so forth and so on. So when you get finished installing Linux onto a computer, you can get to work. And not only that, installing more software is as simple as going to an item where it says add remove software and clicking what you want, waiting for it to download, and away you go. It's very simple to use. And when I say thank goodness we're all geeks, okay, not only is Linux easy to install, but if you don't have to install it, it's extremely easy to use. Okay, these are my kids. I have kindergarten kids using Linux every single day. Do you think they care? Of course they don't care. It's a computer that comes on and makes colors and stuff, and we get to play. Whee! Okay? They think it's great. They don't care what it is. But one thing that I can tell you that I care about, I have 22 units in my lab, and the last time that I did an actual buy of workstation in my lab was about $25,000. The machine was just hair over $1,000 when you take the monitor, the big CPU, and the keyboard, and all that sort of stuff. That was a few years back, and they were running Windows XP at that time. Actually, that was quite a while ago. And so that was a lot of money. $25,000, that's quite a bit of money, that, at least I think it is. Considering the fact that the lab that I have now cost me $7,000. $7,000. Now, you can't see it right now, but my computers that I use in this lab are this big. They stand about that high, they're about that wide, and they're white. And really all they are is Linux, what we call Linux thin client. I have brand new LCD monitors. There's not a single CRT left in my school. I erased them all in 1 year. And of course we have USB, you know, laser mice and so forth and so on. So my entire lab is made up of Linux thin clients. They give off no heat, they make zero noise, and it costs $7,000. And so when I do the math with my kids, I say, okay, kids, I can spend $25,000 on full-fledged workstations running Windows and so forth, or I can spend $7,000 on these things, which work just as good, right? Because I asked them, yeah, they work great. How many labs can I buy? And so we do the math. And it basically comes out to 3.5. In my school. It's interesting story because a couple of years ago, up until a couple of years ago, there was at least one Windows computer in every classroom. All of the kids, or the ones that the kids were supposed to use, were Linux thin clients. By the way, I'm not saying that everybody has to run out and do thin clients by any means. You can even do, we have Linux workstations as well. Just thin clients make it really easy for us to manage. I only have to worry about one computer, the server. The rest of them is probably deploying. It's a matter of hooking it up, plugging it in, and you're done. I actually have my kids do it. I have a bunch of kids come in the summertime. We have one day, which I buy pizza and ice cream and so forth for them, and I give them all the thin clients, and I say, ready, go! And they run around to all the different rooms and set them up. And at the day before school gets out, I send all of my seventh graders. They do this in one 40-minute period in a school of 500, okay? In one 40-minute period, my group of about 20 to 21 seventh graders completely empties the school of thin clients, and we pack them away. Now, for those of you who have been to my conference in Bethel, you'll see my computer lab actually shows up at that conference. I put my entire computer lab in the back of my pickup. That's pretty cool. I mean, first of all, the thin client fit in boxes about this big, so I can put all 22 thin clients in a box about like this. And then my monitors, you know, the LCD monitors, they go pack in pretty tight. I put those in a bunch of Rubbermaid things and so forth, and the keyboard and mic, and I can put my entire computer lab in the back of my pickup truck and still have a lot of room for other things. Anyway, you were asking about the classroom. So up until a couple of years ago, there was a Windows machine in every classroom. And that was a hassle from my perspective, because I still had to build an image for those machines. I still had to deploy those machines. And it was just, they were just different enough that it made my job as a system administrator a little more difficult. And my teachers were getting used to using Linux. In fact, I was having teachers come to me and say, can you get that Windows machine out of here and give me a Linux one? And the most common excuse that I heard was that the clip art was better on the Linux machines. Who am I to argue? Sure, no problem, whatever. So I finally decided one summer that, you know what, I'm just not going to do this anymore. I'm going to make them all Linux workstations and just see what happens. So I just finished re-imaging the entire K2 wing, and I was running around shutting off the machine, and my technician was behind me. We round the corner into Mrs. Hinckley's room. Mrs. Hinckley is a 33-year veteran kindergarten teacher. Okay? If you can't please one of those, you're screwed. All right? Walk around the corner. She's already logged in and working. I just finished re-imaging them. And she's already logged in and working. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, nothing. I'm just making up some stuff for the first day of school. You know how to... A year in the life of an elementary school teacher, in particular in kindergarten, their year is dictated by the season or holidays. The first day of school, all kinds of posters about the first day of school. What's the next one? Columbus Day. You know, Columbus, 1492, all kinds of posters about that. The next one is Halloween. And if you don't have the clip art to go with all this stuff, forget it. You're out of business. They're going to eat you alive. This is why this slide is entitled as such. Okay? One of the great things about open source software is, so I round the corner on this 33-year veteran who's, you know, pretty entrenched and set in her ways. She's already logged into the Linux computer and using OpenOffice to make her posters for the first day of school. I had not told a single soul in the school that I was changing everything, well, except for the principal, that I was changing everything from Windows to Linux. I hadn't told them. And that going to get to my next slide, I think. To avoid the trumpet, if you're going to introduce open source software in your classroom or in your school, just do it. Don't make a big announcement that it's fascinating. Hey, guess what? We're all going to throw away Microsoft Office and we're going to start using Open Office next year. You want to get a backlash? That's how you do it. Just do it. In fact, I had one second grade teacher several years ago, and I understand we've been using Linux in the classroom since 2001. Several years ago, a second grade teacher went to my principal, who, by the way, would have been very difficult for me to do any of these things without his support. And not that he's a Linux geek or anything like that, he just understands the value of it. But she walked into his office one day and said, you know, this Linux thing, I just don't know, it's really hard. I can't understand why we just can't have our Windows computers and so forth. And he looked up at her and said, that's funny, your second graders seem to be able to handle it. And that was all we ever heard from her. Okay? Another teacher came down and said she didn't like Firefox. This was on a Windows machine. Didn't like Firefox. She wanted Internet Explorer back on her desktop. I hadn't uninstalled Internet Explorer, which can't really do that. I had just buried it so that nobody could find it. I wanted them using Firefox for the obvious reasons of, you know, virus protection and that sort of thing. So I instructed my tech, which I only have one day a week, by the way, I instructed my tech to go down to her classroom and change the icon on Firefox to a big blue E. Never heard from her again. So, avoid the trumpet, okay? Avoid making big, huge announcements. Just do it. Start small, okay? Don't make a mass rollout of something that you're not familiar with, okay? Start small, start in your lab, start in the classroom, get some feedback from the teacher. Most of us know who the early adopters are, okay? We know who in our schools are the ones that we can go to and say, hey, you know, can you try this out? That probably some of them are you. I had my certain teachers that I... Not recording me. Testing? Anyway. I had my teachers that I knew would be accepting of change and so forth when we did our rollout of Linux Thin Client. And sure enough, it worked exactly like I thought it would work. In March, I had a kiosk set up out in the hallway. This was back in 2001. A bunch of teachers walking by. Lots of screenshots. You know, here's what you can do. I had a dummy account that they could log into and check all this stuff out. Then 2 weeks later, I put out an email. Anybody who would like extra computers in their classroom, like the ones that I had out in the hall, just let me know. And I got the ones that I expected to get. I got Mrs. LaJoy and Mrs. DeGere. And so I delivered those computers to their classroom. The other teachers say, where did you get all those computers? How come you got more computers than I do? No, those are the ones that David emailed us about. Oh, really? Is that Linux thing? How do the kids like it? Kids love it. And what they see is they see the kids doing more work. So instead of the one computer classroom where you've got, and we've all experienced that, you know, one computer classroom where you've got teachers scheduling the kids for their 15 minutes of computer time every week. Some kid has to stay in for weeks from recess to use the computer. Now instead, they've got 4 computers in there. So what used to take them a week to type up a report, takes them a morning now. You 4, go type your report. Now you 4, go type your report, and next thing you know, they're done. But that's pretty powerful. And the other teachers started to see that, and so I get these meek little emails saying, you know, I just kind of like, you know, wondering if you had any more of those, like, you know, Linux computers that you could kind of like, you know, put in my room. Anyway, so that was March. By May, the entire school was covered. It's pretty powerful, very powerful. Use it yourself. It's pretty difficult to tout somebody, tout something if you don't use it yourself. So I encourage you to use things like Celestia, OpenOffice, Firefox, whatever the case may be, and use it yourself. Firefox, but how many of you use Firefox on a regular basis? Firefox rocks, doesn't it? I love the extensions. There's just so many cool things you can do with it. Give it away freely and often, okay? One of the best things you can do, I actually do this. You can actually go on to Ubuntu.com and you can order Ubuntu CDs and they will ship them to you first. The actual CDs, in fact, some of you may, I don't know if you have them in your packet, but there's in the room up back, there's some in there. They, you know, it's an actual printed CD case and so forth and so on, and they will ship them to you for free. You basically just need to tell them why, and if you say, I'm going to give them out to my student, they'll give you a whole bunch. And there's nothing cooler than standing up in front of your class and just using a Frisbee on CDs to all these kids, and they think it's great. Of course, the next day, you're going to get all these letters from parents saying, are you sure this is okay to install? give away things freely and often. In the early days, I used to give away what used to be called StarOffice at that time, which we now know as OpenOffice, but there still is StarOffice. StarOffice is the commercial version of OpenOffice. The only difference between StarOffice and OpenOffice is ClipArt. That's it. So what you do is you get one copy of StarOffice, you take all the ClipArt out. I'm just kidding. You can't do that, by the way.
In terms of those versions of Office, I think you said that the image for the laptops in Maine had NeoOffice. Why do you think they didn't go with OpenOffice?
Only because on the PPC side. Right now, we still have the iBook G4s in the middle school level. The high school, if this next refresh goes through, we're on our second refresh. We did 4 years, and then now we're on our second 4 years. But we've been doing this for 7 years now. NeoOffice is what runs on the PowerPC, and OpenOffice runs on Intel. There is a PowerPC version of OpenOffice now, but at the time when the image was created, it wasn't stable, so that's why. NeoOffice is simply OpenOffice and a Java wrapper. That's all it is. It requires Java to start it up. It's one of the reasons why it's so slow to get started. If you've ever used NeoOffice, it takes forever to start. Once it's started, it works great, but it takes a long time to load, simply because of the fact that it has to start all this other stuff first. But with regard to things like OpenOffice, back in the early days, I actually used to charge $2, and that was just to cover the cost of the CD. People, unless you brought in a blank CD, of course, everybody would bring in those AOL CDs. Remember those things? Here, can you put it on this? No. What am I supposed to do with it? Make it into a mobile? So give it away freely and often. If you have any kids that don't have something at home, give it to them. Okay? And before you know it, you create that culture in your school that suddenly the community is using the same things that you use. You know, like Randy said, the community will start using what it is that you're using in school. Put links to it on your school's homepage. I don't know how prolific broadband is in this area, but in our area, just about everybody has either DSL or cable. And so I put links to the openoffice.org site, and everybody's able to download it. By the way, you know the 100 megabit fiber connection he was talking about? I have one of those, too. Once underway, point out the savings. Nothing better than to come up to the school board and say, hey, you know, that Microsoft school agreement we bought last year, you can have it back. We don't need it anymore. When you can point out to your school board, to your administration, whatever the case may be, that in next year's budget, you know, if we really need to save some money, and this is one of those years, believe me, if you're having any trouble like I am, this is one of those years where we're really having to look about with going without. The nice thing is, we can go without. I'm just waiting for somebody to say that the main office doesn't need to use Microsoft Windows anymore. I don't see that happening, but the moment they say that, I'm ready. And be realistic, okay? Just be realistic in terms of your goals and so forth with regard to a rollout. Don't expect that everybody's just going to fall over and say, hey, this is wonderful stuff on the first day. It'll take a little bit of time. Thank you. And watch the magic, especially if you don't make a big deal out of it and you just do it. You'll be surprised at how people will just take to it. A really great piece of software, if you ever get a chance to check it out, particularly for middle school kids, but you can use it with younger kids, and you can definitely use it with older kids, is a program called Scratch, as in, you know, Scratch. It is a programming interface that was developed by MIT. It looks like jigsaw puzzle pieces that you put together, so you build a computer program by putting puzzle pieces together. It is amazing. My kids have made some amazing projects just in the last year, and what's really cool is to watch them actually develop a program. They say, I want to make a program where a guy carries a sword and he kills giant flesh-eating slugs and stuff like that. Okay, go. I have no idea how he's going to do it. I mean, I'm sure if I sat down, I could probably figure it out. But that's the thing. I'm sure if they sit down, they can figure it out, and that's exactly what they do.
It's being demoed. And we've got a table with Scratch being demoed.
Awesome. It's an amazing program. Bryant was telling me a story about one particular school that actually created voting machines. I think it was his wife. Creating voting machines and then teaching kids how to hack into them, right?
Yeah.
Not hack into the voting machines like the ones in Florida, but the point is it's all problem solving. And it's all free and open source. You don't have to pay for this. And if somebody really, really, really wants to, you can take some of those really gifted kids and say, hey, you know what? Let's look under the hood. My kids in my classroom use a typing program called KTouch Typing Tutor. The newest version, the developer took out a feature that we used a lot, which is a thing that shows their progress with regard to a chart and so forth. And that, when I did the update, the kid pointed it out to me. He said, Mr. Clark, you know, we can't do this anymore. What? The kids were all up in arms. What are we going to do? Okay, let's find out who made this software. So they look in the about thing and they find out his name is Andreas Nikolai. Okay? And it has his email address on there. So they emailed him. They said, Dear Mr. Nikolai, having no idea where he is and whether or not he even spoke English. Turns out he does. But we would really like it if you would put this feature back in. We use it in our fifth grade class for typing and so forth and so on. 6 hours later, he may be on the other side of the world, I don't know. 6 hours later, he emails back and he's like, oh my goodness, somebody actually uses my software. This is great. Hey, I got all these other cool ideas. What do you guys think about this? So not only does he put that piece back in, he adds some new features that he had been thinking about. He sends us a copy of his software, okay, you know, a download link. We install it on our server, and the kids start using it. Something that direct from the developer, direct from the guy from wherever he is, I never did ask, wherever he happens to be, my kids were upset about a particular feature. They wrote to the guy, he put it back in, and he sent us the software. We tested it, we installed it, put it back in, and kids were happy, we were happy, everything worked great. The only thing, he emailed us a couple times afterwards to find out, you know, how's this working? And we did have a couple of cases where some things would, we had one particular case where the letters would go away once in a while. And so we'd tell him about it, he'd send us a fix. And so my kids were actually actively collaborating with the developer of this particular piece of software simply because they found a problem and they were able to contact them. And they thought that was the coolest thing. My fifth graders. It's all about access. It's one of my biggest buzzwords. Okay? We no longer have the one computer platform because computers are inexpensive and or free. In terms of donations and so forth. You can make Linux thin clients out of almost nothing. And so for me, it's all about access to technology. If you don't have a one-to-one laptop program, no problem. As long as you've got computers everywhere and kids can sit down and use them whenever they need to, they can have the same software now and the same software at home, whatever the case may be, it's all about access to technology. Teachers, those are the ones you got to worry about. I happen to be one, so I'm qualified to say this. What a bunch of whiny babies teachers can be. Oh, my goodness. One little change. And they go, and the kids don't have any problem with it at all. But I will tell you this. When you make a change, you have a 3-month weathering period. that you have to go through. Okay, especially if you make big changes. You have to endure it for 3 months. People coming to you and say, I can't believe we're still using this, and blah, 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 and so forth. After 3 months, it all goes away, and before you know it, it's just the opposite. Now they don't want the old stuff back. I have teachers coming to me saying, hey, can I have this instead? You know, this works so much better than that, and so forth. Couple of great websites for those of you who are looking for software for Mac, opensourcemac. By the way, that's supposed to say org, not corg. I did that this morning. opensourcemac.org, opensourcewindows.org. By the way, there's also a companion website, opensourcemac.com and opensourcewindows.com. I just didn't put them all up there. The OS Windows SourceForge website, CoolForge, and as well as sourceforge.net. This site is absolutely humongous. There's just about every open source program in the world out there, many of which are cross-platform. Some are not, but I invite you to take a look. But if you're looking to get started with some really great programs that you can use today, these two particular sites are of particular interest. And I can tell you right now that most of these icons that you see right here came from that website. The only other thing I'd like to show you really quickly, first of all, this is a, just for anybody who's interested, this is a netbook running Linux, and it happens to be running Ubuntu Netbook Remix. So in other words, the interface is a little different. I could make it look like a regular desktop if I wanted to, but I decided to use this Netbook Remix interface because it's more conducive to the small screen. So I am using open source software, okay, to do my presentation. I'm not one of these people that comes in with a Windows computer, and I'm just kidding. But so there's just so much that you can do. So much that you can do using just plain open source software. So don't let budget be your constraint anymore. One of the things that I found is that when you liberate yourself into thinking that I don't have to use this stuff all the time, I don't have to use Microsoft Office, I don't have to do Inspiration, Kidspiration, and KidPix, and so forth and so on. By the way, is KidPix still in business? I think they went out of business recently. TuckPaint, by the way. TuckPaint is almost the same thing as KidPix with the exception of movies. It doesn't do movies. Whatever. I guess that's it. The only last thing that I'll leave you with, and it's in your packet, can I see your... This right here, if you like this conference here, we have a conference in Maine called FOSED. It's actually right on the border of Maine in the Sunday River Ski Area location at Gould Academy in Bethel, Maine. It is a three-day hands-on conference. It's $495, covers everything. Food, drink, room, board, the whole bit, and the conference. That's a pretty good deal. And the food is to die for. Let's just give you an example. One of the offerings sometimes that we have at lunch is lamb moussaka. And, you have pizza and hot dogs and all that stuff, but, it's amazing. We have a banquet on the second night, served by a chef and a big top hat and roast beef and dessert table to die for, and so forth. But the biggest thing about this conference as opposed to a conference like what you hear at today, by the way, Brian is also my partner in this endeavor as well. We've been doing this for about... this will be our seventh year. One of the big things about this is, did you get a chance to immerse yourself in the whole thing? And we have things for classroom teachers, integrationists, and techies as well. You're free to move about and do whatever you want. So if you want to learn how to build a server, great. If you want to learn how to use Web 2.0 technology in your classroom, blogging, Twittering, personal learning networks, and so forth, we have it all. I invite you to check this out. It's www.fosed.com, which is FOSFED.com. And I hope that you can join us. So, that's it. If you have any questions, I'll be around all day. Thank you.